Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm your host, Tim Hayes, for the first hour today. Michael and Jeannie Rice will be here for the second hour, beginning at noon Central Time. Today is Thursday, March 14th, 2019. I'm privileged to be here, and I thank you all for being here, whether you're on the show live on the switchboard now, or you're listening to your computer, or you're catching this show on the archives. We appreciate everybody who donates their time to this project. The project is helping me make my life a better life, helping you make your life a better life, learning tools, and then practicing and gaining in support and practicing so that I can apply tools to improve the quality of my life. One application of a tool at a time, one worksheet at a time, one breath session at a time, one targeted journaling session at a time. Every time I pick up a tool and apply it to my life, triggered by the fact that I was not feeling total peace, total calm, total compassion, totally loving energy, every time I apply a tool, I gain benefit. It isn't always a powerful, dramatic benefit. Sometimes it's just a subtle shift in my energy. Sometimes it's quite a powerful shift in my energy. Sometimes that powerful shift in my energy is accompanied by a dramatic insight. We are here to make available to people and teach people the use of tools available at www.whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And if you go to that page and click on either the Start Here button or the red and white bullseye, it'll take you to a page where you can have access to some of the most powerful, effective, and efficient tools I've learned in my 44 and a half years of doing therapy that can help you transform your relationships. By way of example, I started talking yesterday about how Tuesday was a very full day. My term for it is blessedly busy. And in the middle of the day Tuesday, I had some things happen that resonated very strong energies in me. And there was something about the interpretation I threw on these events and what it resonated in me that left me with a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach and a very powerful pattern of recurring negative thoughts that was quite distracting. I had to put quite a bit of mental energy to the task of staying focused for the rest of the day, all the way through Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday evening support group. I did a little bit of work after the support group. I talked a little bit about it. I had a little bit of shift by the time we did the internet show yesterday. Yesterday was another very full day, lots of powerful sessions, and so my work was postponed until after I got home. And I got home last night, and I still had a very heavy, very sick feeling in my stomach, right at the edge of nausea. And I've had access to these tools long enough to know that unless I pick up the tools and use them, that energy will either continue as a major distraction and a discomfort at a conscious level, or I'll find a way to bury it at an unconscious level and it will continue to be a disruption for me. So I pulled out the app, which is one of the tools that's available for free. If you go to your App Store or the Google Play Store and you type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness. You can download an app completely free and completely private that will let you do what I did. And so I opened up the app as soon as I got into bed, and I said, I'm going to fill out these blanks, and I'm going to keep my breath moving, and I'm going to accept the shifts in energy. Perhaps the discomfort gets even worse. We had somebody call yesterday and said, yeah, I did a worksheet, and I'm even more mad than when I started. And I say, well, that's probably an indication of a success, because it's probably removed some barriers to me seeing some of my deeper pain that I wasn't even aware was there when I started the worksheet process. So I did a worksheet, and it resulted in a shift, not a dramatic shift, but a little bit more comfort, and I was able to get to sleep. And then I was awake at 1:30 in the morning, thinking rather obsessively about the thoughts that were there when I awoke and about the events of Tuesday afternoon. So I picked up the phone, put on my glasses, and filled out another worksheet. In this case, there are 7 steps in the worksheet process. And in this case, I got into the second step, and the tears came, and a powerful image came to my mind of an event that happened a full, let's say, 47 years ago. A powerful event that happened maybe only 45 years ago. So I kept my breath moving. I let the tears come before I went on to the rest of the worksheet. And I noticed by the time I had finished the entire worksheet that the sick feeling, the very heavy feeling in my stomach, was down to about a fourth or a tenth, whatever. I don't know how to judge those things, but it was nowhere near as intense. And so I stayed awake for long enough to do another worksheet and do a little bit of journaling, and I got back to sleep. And I woke up this morning with the thoughts coming out of a dream that were directly related to the worksheet. And so I made note about it before I got out of bed. And then I carved out the time when I got to work to do a half an hour or 45 minutes of writing. Came out in the turbulence of thoughts and flooding and emotions and connecting it to an event 40-some years ago. That's why we do this work. Right now, as I sit here, I have energy moving, but there's no nausea in my stomach. There's no sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. There's no heavy weight in my chest or my stomach. And yet nothing has changed about what happened on Tuesday that was the impetus for me to choose the interpretation that was connected to all of that upsetting energy in me, all of those intense negative emotions, etc. We offer this tool for free. Michael and Jeannie Rice have put together a webpage that's got more powerful, useful stuff on it and interesting stuff than you'll probably get to in the next 10 years if you dig in and start right now. And the vast majority of it's free. We encourage people, if you get benefit from this work, to donate to Michael and Jeannie, because while they've made a commitment to make these tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, even if those people don't have the money to pay for it, Michael and Jeannie haven't figured out how to do it for free. So it's costing them money to host this internet show. It's costing them money to build the app. All right, so the area code is 563-999-3581. And if you press 1, I'll click your number and it'll be in the air. So if nobody raises a hand, I'm going to have to go right back to the processing. I'd made some notes in the middle of the night that I would say, okay, we're going to take you on a journey. I'm gonna share the experience to the best of my ability to kind of draw this roadmap for how this happened for me. I have made this meant to what to give, to commit, to put a tremendous amount of time and finances and effort into a project, and the goal of the project is of a bigger scope than any project I've taken on in my life before. And the point of it is to create a broader awareness of these tools, what Michael and Jeannie have made available on their website, the power of these tools, the accessibility of these tools, the efficiency of these tools, to help me change my negative emotions, to use them as a warning signal, to improve the quality of my life, to improve the quality of my relationships. And I've been building into that until last summer when it dawned on me that what I had been doing to make that happen just wasn't producing results. So I invested a significant amount of money to engage a mentor, coach, guide, expert, what have you. And on Tuesday, in the middle of the afternoon, right between two sessions with patients, it was revealed to me without beyond any shadow of a doubt that this person cannot do for me what we had planned for him to do for me. And that basically, as the line from Blazing Saddles says, the minister says to the new sheriff, son, you're on your own. And in the moment where that became obvious to me, I felt this heavy weight and sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. So I gratefully, after years of working with tools like this and having my own therapy and all kinds of other things, I had the ability to step back with my conscious logical mind and gently ask myself, how am I doing this? And put it on hold and refuse to act from that, refuse to panic. As I said yesterday, if I hadn't had these tools, the sensations in my body, the sick feeling in my stomach were so intense that I probably 20 years ago would have gone to a doctor or an emergency room. But I know better than that. I was able to have enough of my mental awareness observing that, oh, this really unexpected thing just happened and reveals to you something very important. And then instantaneously with that, here comes a sick feeling in the pit of your stomach. So as I said, when I got through the day yesterday knowing, feeling that heavy, sick feeling. And I managed to use the breath work that I teach people and use my knowledge of the acupuncture meridians to do a little bit of tapping and finger rubbing and breathing between sessions. And I got through the day, and that sick feeling was still there. So when I got home, I filled out a worksheet. And so here's what the worksheet looked like. I filled it out on the app, which I'm very grateful for. This, the ready accessibility, I can do this laying on my back in the bed. I don't have to have the pen or the paper. I can't tell you how many times I've had my pen go through the paper on a worksheet when I'm trying to do them in bed, sitting up on an elbow. So it's very, very convenient for me to have this on my phone. So thank you again, Jeannie Rice. Again, you can go to your app store and type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and download it for free. So here's the worksheet. The premise of this worksheet is my essential nature, a human life, my very being is the energy of creation, the energy of love. The goal of this internal forgiveness wake-up sheet is to empower me to remove fear and any hostility so that I can return my awareness to the direct experience of my true nature as this energy of creation. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. And then number 1A says, I, Tim, who am this energy of love, am experiencing, and I wrote, sick feeling in my stomach. It feels like fear. So use a separate worksheet for each emotion. Remember that hostility and fear always tell me my mind is off the mark. It comes from corrupt data. And then I name the topic of my of attention, the focus of my attention. So the focus of my attention was this person that I wanted to be my mentor. And what I wrote happened is he blew it on the coaching call. So I took a breath and I coached on by the worksheet to remember that if he's the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? So I did another breath and I read how the app tells me, the truth is only my thoughts cause my emotional upset. So I took another breath and I filled in the thought that came to mind that's associated with my fear and that knot in my stomach. The thought I came up with was, I have to start all over with my project. Then I took a breath and looked at the punishment thoughts. The punishment thought was, I want to punish the mentor by letting everybody know that he's no good, telling people. And I'm punishing myself by generating this feeling of panic. So then I took another breath, and the worksheet on the app reminds me to release and surrender the sick feeling in my stomach and the thoughts about the coaching call and my need to punish somebody by telling people, and my need to punish myself by generating panic. And then it says, it coaches me to cancel my need to be right and cancel my need to make up another story out of these brain cells about my past experiences and my thoughts about them to try and prove to me, to hallucinate the proof that my fear and hostility-based reality is true. And then it asks me to choose to love truth and willingly face and process out all of the disease-producing energies for and from all of my relations and all my generations. And then it asks me if I'm willing to go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. And at this point, I thought, yeah, this sick feeling could get even worse. or I could get actually nauseous and have to throw up. I could get a headache. One of the last times I did a powerful worksheet like this, it generated the energy moving through me, generated the pain I would have labeled a migraine. So I said, yes, I'm willing to go through that. And then number five says, when I'm upset, my perception's built out of corrupt data. And the thing that drives my mind to use that particular data is my goal for this mentor to be powerful, to be a powerful, positive agent for change in my life. This perception is a limiting picture constructed at a maximum of 9 bits of data. During the period of time, at least 10,000 brain cells are firing in my brain, and probably 20 trillion bits of data are hitting my senses. So it's an extraordinarily tiny fragment of the truth of what is. So by canceling my goal, my replicate mind's reality collapses and gives me a direct contact with the denied, dissociated, and projected parts of my carbon-based memory. The carbon-based memory simply means the brain in my head that functions like a computer hard drive. It can only receive the things I type in and spit them back out. That part of my mind is frequently projecting and blaming others for its content. So while I hold love conscious, active, and present in my mind, I now choose to collapse my mind's lies by willingly canceling my goal for my mentor to be a powerful, positive agent for change in my life. And then it goes on to ask me to invite something other than my conscious, logical mind to assist me. And I chose here the elemental force specific for humans that's there to break off the effects of my errors in thought and guide me to truth and happiness if I just ask it to. We all have this. We all have a connection to a higher intuition. In some of us, it's more or less developed than in others, and yet it's there for everybody. And it's possible to strengthen it wherever I am on my journey. So I ask that force, that elemental force, to restore me to my newborn essence of love, to incline me toward healing, to help me open a direct conscious relationship with, and gently remove the denied and dissociated and the projected parts of my carbon-based memory. And I breathe, and I tap into those loving thoughts that I mentioned earlier. And then I just gently repeated that I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need for anyone or anything else to change. I specifically cancel my goal in this worksheet. I put my conscious, logical mind aside. I refuse the temptation to try and figure it out and ask to be shown. And just I laid there and just watched what came up. And soon after the second, maybe third repetition of I cancel my need to be right, I got a very clear image of myself as a 14-year-old between high school or grade school and high school, maybe 15 years old, and I had agreed to repaint a very long white picket fence. And I was out in the summer heat while all my friends were away playing with a wire brush and a paint scraper at the impossible, eternally long, never to be finished, completely ungrateful task of stripping thick white paint off of a long, did I mention it was long? Long white picket fence. The bottom line is, when that memory came up, I had a little tear in my eye. I had a shudder of shame because I abandoned that job. I did not complete that job. And I never felt good about it. I never faced up to it directly. I never asked for help. I just, in effect, ran away from that job, abandoned it. I said I would do something, and I didn't do it. The connection for me was instantaneous. This mentor told me he would do something. He didn't do it. So I breathed. I took a breath, scanned my body, and the worksheet asks me, what do I feel now? I felt calmer. And then I just wrote what I just told you, the memory of that upset. And then I gave myself permission to write a loving goal, which would be 5 more worksheets process on that lump in my stomach, on that sick feeling in my stomach. And I rolled over and went to bed. And about 1:30 in the morning, I was wide awake. So I pulled out the app again once I realized the sick feeling was still in my stomach. And I went through the very same thing. It's the same target. It's the same dynamic that happened. And time it was confusion. As I went through, this time when I canceled the goal, I mean, I didn't even get there. I got down to number 2, where it says I willingly go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. And I had another powerful flash memory. And this one brought tears with it. I had to sit up because the tears were running into my ears. This one was a memory of my coming home from college. I wasn't even finished with college. It was at the very end of the school year. And the actual day of the end of college had passed, but I had 2 incompletes. And in that last week of college, I basically had a nervous breakdown. So physically I was okay, but every time I went to work on those 2 incompletes, the numbers on the page would swirl and I would get confused and I would look at the clock and realize I'd been sitting there for 30 or 40 minutes without doing anything. And it didn't matter how many times I tried, I was not able to get my mind to focus to complete those 2 projects. So I finally packed it up and went home. And what I thought I was going home to was my father. And my father had been this bright, shining light my entire life, a loving man, a great counselor of people, a good businessman, very bright, one of the smartest people I ever knew, steady as a rock. And so what better than to go home and say, Dad, I'm right here at the crux of leaving college and going into the adult world, and I've got this crisis. I need some advice. Dad will know what to do. Go home and talk to Dad. And the memory that flooded into me was that when I got home and I waited until Dad was alone outside and I went outside to talk to Dad and laid out for him, or I was just trying to lay out for him. He was tending roses in his garden and I was standing out there. It was a warm spring day. He was completely unable to tune into what I was saying. Dad, the man who raised me, was simply not there. And it was so confusing. It was such a shock to my system. I still remember. I remember the image like it was yesterday. And later that night, I asked my mom, what's going on with my dad? And the bottom line is, my dad was in the middle of a raging, full-blown manic episode. So as I say that, my tears come up again. The man who raised me wasn't there. And this is a crisis. I needed help. I'm facing the decision of walking away from 4 years of college without a degree, or trying to postpone it, or put it on hold and go get the credits I needed from another institution and have them mailed in. And the guy I'm going to for advice, the man who's always been there, is not there. So the tears come up now. The tears came up then. I just sat up in bed, did a little crying, realized the fabulous connection between the emotions I downloaded then and the interpretation I placed on Tuesday's events. Here's one of the biggest projects I've ever undertaken. I'm hiring somebody, expecting him to be that bright, shining light, the mentor who's been there before. who guides me through it, and he's just not there. He's not able to do for me what all of my expectations of him wanted him to do. So I let the tears come, and I did the breathing. And then the intensity of that emotion at 1:30 in the morning, I labeled it as an 8 to get it started. And by the end of the worksheet, it was only a 2. I felt more calm. And then I asked to be shown times when I have let people down or failed to be a powerful, positive change agent in other people's lives. And I threw that open to the universe, to light, love, Holy Spirit, to continually give me feedback about times when I might be shying away from a commitment to do what I said I would do, or I might be on the cusp of letting somebody down. And then the loving goal that I put in place at the end of this worksheet was to do 2 more worksheets specifically on this memory with my father. Enough energy, and that almost completely relieved the sick feeling in my stomach so that I could get some more sleep. And this morning, upon waking, I did another, because I woke up with the words, "I've lost my rudder." And before that was finished coming out of my mouth, I felt like I've lost my rudder and my keel. And if anybody knows anything about boats, the rudder is what I steer with. But if I don't have a keel, if I don't have a center running board or a deep keel in my boat, the rudder is next to useless. So I woke up from some kind of a dream that had me sitting with the thought, I lost my rudder and my keel, that I'm basically just on the water, maybe the ocean, being blown by the wind. And so the thought I used to create this sadness was, I can't do this without external guidance. I worked through the worksheet. The goal I had for myself in that worksheet, give me a moment while I dry some tears and get the seas clearly again. The goal I set was for me to be able to trust my inner knowing. And when I went through the worksheet process again and did the breathing and reconnected with love, and then asked to be shown from something outside my conscious logical mind, what I became aware of, this wasn't a flash of a big memory. There was no visual image associated with this one as there had been in the past 2 worksheets. But I became very clearly aware of the thought, I'm afraid that if I trust my inner guidance, I will lose connection to my parents. And in my mind, it was very clear that when I was a child, when I would speak about things I saw, Kenny was just talking about an apparition. If I had had one of those and told my parents, it absolutely was intolerable for them. I know that my very loving, caring parents, both of them were very concrete in their thinking. They were very action-oriented. They were very Western mind-oriented. And if I would have said, oh, I just saw Grandpa Hayes, who died when my father was 6 years old, it would have just freaked them out. If I said, oh, I know what to do here, that would have freaked them out, because I'm just a kid. How am I to know? So in that worksheet, I felt calmer again. My upset went from an 8 down to a 4. It wasn't two or one, so I knew I had more work to do. And I chose the loving goal to write a letter to my parents about giving up my internal knowing in order to stay connected to them. So I breathed and checked out my upset level and got up extra early, got going directly and didn't do some of the things I would normally do in a day, and came to work and decided to write and gave myself time to write. And I just started writing. Now, my mom is still in the body but on her way out, and my dad died in 1999. 20 years ago. So the benefit to me is what I've been trained to in this work is that it doesn't matter that my dad died 20 years ago. This isn't about my dad. This isn't about the interactions between me and my dad. This isn't about the choices my dad made. This isn't about my dad's manic depressive tendencies. This isn't about any action he ever took in his life. It's about the interpretation that I put on those events and the energies that I created and generated the more I poured thought into those events or those thoughts about those events, and or, as in this case, how the interpretation I placed on that event was energetically connected to something. An event happened on Tuesday. In an instant, without even being consciously aware of it, I threw an interpretation on it, and it energetically resonated something that happened in 1976 and had enough energy resonating in me to give me the feeling that I had swallowed a basketball with rough edges. So my knowledge about how the system works, my active demonstration to myself for the past 15 plus years through the application of these tools gave me the experience that if I sat down and wrote a letter to my dad who's been gone for 20 years and my mother who's no longer able to process these kinds of things with me, I can shift energies in my system. And I did. And there's more writing to be done. I probably only wrote for 45 minutes, but I've got a couple pages, and the tears were flowing when I was writing, and I will continue that work. I will go back to the worksheets. I will continue writing whatever feels like it needs to be written to my parents, and I will continue to shift this energy. And that's my offering for today. That's why we teach these kinds of tools. That's how it isn't always Dr. Feelgood, and yet it's always moving me forward. It's always giving me a better chance to see the truth of what is, which is this is just life expressing. As so many of the great teachings tell us, all events are neutral, and they're neutral for me until I throw an interpretation on them. So I'm going to take a break and throw down some water and ask if anybody has a question or a comment. 563-999-3581. Okay, well, here's hoping that we're actually out there in the airwaves. Here's someone with a hand up, area code 828. You're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is Magda from Missouri. And I just want to quickly say, because I have a feeling other people are going to call too, I'm so grateful that you shared your process in such detail. That is the biggest lesson for us listeners, for myself. I'll speak for myself. I just love it. And my heart is full of compassion for what you're going through and holding you in a space of love. So continue, and you're going to feel so great when you get to the other side of this. You know that. You're feeling better and better with each worksheet. So thank you again, Dr. Tim.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. Thank you for the call.
I'll mute myself and listen, okay?
All right. All right. Well, we have probably 10 minutes left before we have to hand the reins over to Michael and Jeannie. Here's someone else. Area code 770. You're in the air.
Thank you. I am Linda in Georgia, and very happy. I agree with Jeannie about what a gift it is for you to share your journey. And I have just recently looked at a lot of YouTubes. Last night, my friend referred me one that relate to these unconscious feelings. And they're saying, people, you need to clear these unconscious feelings, as if it was an easy thing to do. And you are demonstrating and sharing with us that it isn't that easy, and we need a way to do it. And you're sharing in Chicago and through these means the whole world how one can do it. And I really identified with what you said about poking the pen through the paper when you're trying to do it on your elbow on the bed. You are a good writer. You gave me a whole picture, and I go, wow, that's me too, and wow, I can do this too. So I'm just excited right now because I realize that the whole painful separation of wonderful, loving people hating other wonderful, loving people, and I'm standing here and looking at these silly little children and thinking that your plan is probably going to make a difference, and I'm curious how you could chunk down your big, big plan and delegate it to different groups or something. I guess I'm curious about your plan, but it's a personal thing, and I know how wise it is not to talk about things, but to hold the vision. I would like to support you in holding that vision, and I would please give me a picture of what the vision, once your plan is in place and it's a done deal, what does it look like? What's the result, I guess? May I ask that question?
Well, the result is that many, many more people are exposed to these tools.
Mm-hmm.
And they have easy, ready access, and that they have, whether it's through testimonials or a network of support, they've got the motivation to check them out, and that these tools are somehow gotten in front of more and more people. That's the vision, is that in a rather grassroots way, we multiply the efforts using the internet, using social media, using support groups. And it began with, 8 years ago when I said, I'll donate my time 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, to make sure that this, what we now call a podcast, this internet show, has a consistent presentation and is there day in and day out. And it hit me last summer that that's not really getting the results I was looking for. So time to leverage marketing tools and public speaking experts, social media websites, etc. And that's what's been in the offing. And it led a few months ago to making the Thursday support group available on the internet. So people can either call in and listen, or they can call in and have a video presentation.
I haven't done that yet. Thank you for that.
And that's just, what we're hoping is just the beginning. So that's
thank
the vision
you very
as,
much.
As
that's
far
a good
as it's
answer.
Come together.
Great. I appreciate it. And I look forward to continued report back on what I'm doing, making a difference.
Thank you, Linda. Appreciate it. Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
So we have 6 minutes, maybe five. 563-999-3581.
And you have a hand
910.
Up. Hey, Dr. Tim. Susan Darnell in North Carolina, Wilmington.
Oh, I thought that was an Irish accent. Go ahead, Susan.
I just want to say congratulations. That was an awesome process, and I appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable and share that with us and show us what it looks like. I'm on the same time schedule as you sleep, and I'm usually waking up doing sheets in the bed. I just got a clipboard. Recently just got 100 front and back, so I'm ready to go. I just keep it loaded and ready. But, you know, I was thinking I didn't have anything to share, and then as I was hearing the callers, I just thought maybe it might be appropriate just to share a little bit about what I found for myself. The way I look at myself and the way I look at the world is doing this work and asking or talking to any other human being that Ruka lives in is asking Holy Spirit for the support that I need. And if it happens to come through the person standing before me, or if it happens to come through the person that I overhear talking at the grocery store, however, I try to explain to people, if I say something that's helpful, I'm grateful. And I see that as Holy Spirit coming through me. And I always say, you know, I'm just the straw. So don't give me or the straw credit. Just know that every good thing comes from above, or comes from God, or comes from the Spirit within you, the Ruka breath. And that's what I was thinking in the coaching world. When anybody asks me, I do my best to say the prayer to Ruka to please place my ego aside and allow the Spirit to speak through me and allow me to be of service. So I'm thinking with your coach, I have been sitting on the sidelines just admiring you, thinking that's what I'm going to do, and I want to do. And it's so funny because when you tell the story, I just have to say that I think that even though that you as they would say in the South, put your money where your mouth was, you actually invested something that in this world we consider of value, which is the green paper, and you have put it out to the universe. This is what I would like to do. And so I just stand as Ruka comes through anyone and everyone to be your coach and to show you the way. And everything you've done so far to me looks like it's beautiful. So I just wanted to put that out there to all of us, that the real coach is Holy Spirit, Ruka. She lives inside of us. She's our breath. And I am so grateful to be on this, and I'm so grateful to be here. Look at me. I'm going to cry. So
breathe.
Just know you're a true inspiration to us all. I'm grateful that this is on, on the audio.
Well, remember. Remember. What you just said, I'm just the straw. The inspiration is the nourishment that comes through the straw.
Amen. It's beautiful. I think what you say, though, Dr. Tim, and I quote you quite often in my classes, is it takes the willingness to take my bloated nothingness, and I think Dr. Rysik says this too, out of the way and allow myself to put away everything I think I know and come, as A Course in Miracles says, to be totally empty-handed, empty-headed for a Ruka to teach me in each and every moment. And I saw that willingness with you. So I just want to namaste, bow to you and to the whole team that we're on.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And Way of Mastery would talk about it as divine ignorance. You go into it.
I like it.
understanding that I don't really know what anything is or is for, and I don't understand what my brother or sister needs in this moment, and I don't understand all the lessons that may come from a series of events like this and the various interpretations I throw on it that are connected to past traumatic energies I've downloaded. I don't know they're there because I've been running and hiding from them for decades. So it's only, in my estimation so far, the only thing I've seen that works well so far for me is to be willing to use the tool, to be willing to say, if I've got a physical or a mental or emotional upset, it's self-created. The energy that's generating that is inside me. It didn't come from the outside, and the solution can't come from the outside. So the only reasonable thing for me to do is keep my breath moving.
Absolutely. I support you in that. I'll just put it out to anybody who's listening. I'm in doing a breath session on Sunday here in Wilmington. So for the ones who haven't heard, maybe they'll get in contact with me and come and breathe with us.
All right. And I'll remind people that tonight is a Thursday. So that means tonight from 6:30 to 9 Central Time, there's another MindShifter support group that's available through Zoom. And you can find out about that at mindshifters-academy.org, O-R-G. Click on the support groups tab. All the information is there. And you can also listen to some of those recordings from the archives at ch4cs.com on the audio page there. And before I hang up so Michael Rice can tap in, I will just remind us all to try and remember that we come from this energy we call love. We're made of, we call love. We are this stuff we call love, the energy of creation. Everything else is false. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thank you, everyone. Jeannie, take it away.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. All right. Thank you so much. And so while Michael's calling in, I will go ahead and announce that you can go to our website, whyagain.org. Click on the bullseye or start here, and you can download worksheets. And there is, for those who have registered for an intensive and are going to be doing the Pay It Forward program with Julie, the worksheet that she uses in the Pay It Forward program is also now on the website. And so you can download that one, and you'll be up to speed with her when you're working with her. If you click on schedules on our website, you'll see that Food Fund Forgiveness, we're asking everybody to arrive on May the 30th, and the 16 days begin May the 31st. And then we'll have a couple of days off, and there's the 16 days ends on June the 15th. There's a couple of days off, and then on Thursday, June the 20th, will be a three-day, and it's three full days, of personal code evaluation training. And the prerequisite to learn how to use that personal code is that you've either attended teacher's training or laws of living, or that you're registered to attend it. So some people will be attending that are then going to continue on and do the nine-day why and the nine-day teacher's training. But that is a prerequisite for that. And you ask, what's personal code evaluation? It is 162 questions, and it's on the computer, and you just click mostly true, mostly false, and it gives us the results of where your greatest challenges are. There's 10 areas that it scores, and that would be in like stress management, love of self, love of others, nutrition, digestion, toxicity, love for laws of living, and then there's 10 areas. And so it tells us where your greater challenges are so that we can offer assignments to work in those areas. Then you take the evaluation again at the end of the intensive, and you can see where, if you've done your work, that you've improved. And then following the three-day is a nine-day why, and that goes from June the 23rd to July the 1st. And then that ends on the morning of July 1st, and the evening of July 1st begins teacher's training, and that's a nine-day. And looks like the group for all of those is really building, and it should be an awesome time. And I hold the space. I know that Michael will do absolutely fine. I'm not going to be with him this year. I'm going to stay here in Bristol and help my dad. And so we just hold the space, and it will be fabulous. And he is with us now, so welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and thank you, everybody, for getting the transition down from Tim's show to our show. It's sweet to have that first hour going, and next Tuesday, remember, Tim will have a special guest, and that's awesome. Tim, are you with us still?
He is not.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, welcome, everybody. I'm delighted that you're with us.
Yes, he is. Hold on. I'll turn his microphone on. He got lost among all the numbers, but yes, he's with us.
There
cool.
are a few people.
Well,
there are a few people with their hands up.
Well, maybe you could take just a moment and tell us, you know, if there's anybody who wasn't on your segment to the show that perhaps will be as joining us that might want to hear about your special guest next Tuesday. I'm excited.
Well, next Tuesday from 11 to 1, 11 to noon Central, we'll interview Guy Finley about his new book, Relationship Magic. And as I said in the original introduction to this, his Relationship Magic book is perfectly in alignment with healing through relationships, the lecture Dr. Rice gives, and that the tools in that video, and codependence to interdependence, the lecture Dr. Rice gives, which is available for sale at his whyagain.org, and the tools in that lecture. So I don't know whether or not this particular book has made it to the bestseller list, but Guy has had books on the bestseller list. He is a phenomenal writer, presenter. We've used a number of his talks in our support groups, and his work is entirely compatible with all of the work we're doing. So I look forward to that. I'm going to try and give him the hour to educate people about his book, and if it works well, maybe it'll be an intro to having him back on the show when he's not just promoting a book and there's more back and forth. But everything I've ever read, listened to, I've bought his CDs, read his books, is perfectly in alignment with the work we do in the Why Again, in the Mind Shifters Internet Show, etc.
Sweet. Well, I've listened to some of his work. We've been out and met him at his center out west, and yes, everything's so compatible. And the thing I really love about him is his storytelling. He's just an awesome storyteller. It's a fabulous skill that he has. The way he weaves stories into how he teaches is pretty awesome. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for grasping that first hour and sharing it with people. And we're honored and delighted to have you on the team and to be on your team. And together we are moving this forward on a global scale. So pretty sweet. Thank you.
like there's this joy that comes, like, oh, I'm experiencing this overflowing abundance of relationship with God, with this, these life forces of God, these active, you know, amazing forces that are alive in me, right? And how do I now bring it out in the world and help others find it too? So that was the best I could articulate it right now as to like how it showed up for me, just how my experience was with it.
Yeah, stepping into the thing of service. And a thought I'd like to offer, Mark, because I've heard you claim this before, and I heard you just claim it again, and I'm going to make a suggestion that perhaps it'd be the last time in your eternal life that you do claim this. And you talked about a psychotic break. I don't think you had a psychotic break at all. I think my offering would be you broke with insanity, the ego mind, the Mr. Magoo mind, and you started to bring in the true state of being, which is what these Beatitudes are about. And the world says, uh-oh, that's crazy. How dare you function as a human being? You're supposed to, you know, that story I shared the other day about, you know, the crabs in the bucket. When you put one crab in a bucket, it crawls out. If you put two crabs in a bucket, when one tries to call out, the other one grabs it and pulls it back in again. You don't need a lid on a crab bucket. If you got 20 crabs in the bucket and one tries to crawl out, another one will pull it in, another one will pull it in, it'll pull it in. And I'd offer that diagnosis, and if we break down the word diagnosis, a dyad is two, an agnostic is somebody who doesn't know, two who don't know. And oftentimes these diagnoses are simply from the state of the non-being mind, and why aren't you being normal with all these other minds that work in the world of rage and fear and guilt and grief and pain and drama and trauma? You know, come on, get back here with us, because that's how we feel validated. And so I would say you had an opening in your ego structure, something that the world does its best to lock us into. You had an opening in that where truly human life started to show up. That's what, for instance, when you talked about, you know, you'd go into these yoga postures, your structure was saying, okay, here's what you do to open up your antenna so that you receive what you as a true human being are designed to receive. And my offering is that's not a break. That's an opening.
Well, and you're right on. And my I received that. And I would love to find a way of expressing that would help others see what you're saying, you know, with a kind of a clean way of communicating it. But that helped a lot. Thank you. I might come back and listen to that.
No.
And for me personally, so, by the way, just for people listening, I had kind of, and I don't think this is necessarily ripe yet, right? I think what you said is much more ripe. I had come to, you know what, the world talks about these situations in a way that they talk about these situations. And so in the medical model, they would look at the things I went through and say, yeah, it's a psychotic break. In my life experience, it's like, it's wonderful. I'm so glad I had that quote unquote psychotic break. I mean, that was
a healing crisis.
Breakthrough that was needed for me to fully come online and have a life. You know, my before and after pictures, if there was a photo
exactly
that could illustrate it, which it can, because it, you know, the surface looks pretty similar, but if it could reveal the core of a human being, I think what you'd see is the before picture would be someone who was on his deathbed, and the after picture is someone who has risen into new life. And it's such a contrast.
And risen is a good word.
I like it.
That's
too.
The real resurrection. You know, if you realize that people who function out of a mind with hostility or fear active, Yeshua referred to those people. There was one guy who lived in that world and said, man, I want to follow you. And he said, but I have to go bury my parents first. and it was a man's, in that culture, it was a man's job to stay with his parents till they died and literally bury them. And Yeshua was like, well, wait a minute, if you're going to follow me, you're going to step into life. Let the dead bury the dead. Let the blind lead the blind. That's not where you're going to go if you're going to follow me. Now, you are going to get to take up your cross. This process of healing is not a Dr. Feelgood thing. It means we're going to go through the quote-unquote craziness of the non-being mind and have to work through it, and it is a work. I was on the phone this morning. We have a young lady in England. Actually, it was kind of interesting because she shared that, or she had written to us and said, I want to start a book study on your book. It's like, great. So my first question to her when we talked, said, yeah, well, of course, we'll support you with that. My first question was, how did you get a hold of the work? How did you find out about it? She said, well, I don't really know. Somehow your book showed up, ordered from Amazon. I didn't order it, or at least I don't remember ordering it. I don't know why I got it, but I start doing these worksheets, and it is profoundly life-changing. And since I had my quote-unquote, what the world might call a health break or a psychotic break, about 5 years ago, this young woman, she looks like she's maybe 30 or so, she had a brain bleed and as a result went blind and clinically died. And she called it a near-death experience. And, you know, if you're already dead, you can't have a near-death experience. If somebody is dead to the truth of who they are as love, as created essence being called love, then they're already dead. That's the first death. And if clinical death occurs, you know, the self that isn't the non-being self, the self based in hostility or fear, the one that Yeshua said, in order for you to live, you've got to die. That self that needs to die is a self based in hostility and fear. When clinical death occurs, because that's a product of Adam, Adamos, the red clay, when clinical death occurs, that self is collapsed. It's gone. And that's exactly what the Aramaic forgiveness process does, is it collapses that non-being self each time one engages in forgiveness. And when that non-being self is in a non-div state, one gets a chance to experience who they are. And this woman spoke about how after she had this brain bleed and she, quote-unquote, died clinically, all of a sudden, she's like, I started to see things. I started to understand things that didn't make any sense. And as a result of that, she changed her career and started to work with supporting people in having a near-life experience. And somehow or other, she said, you know, the book just showed up from Amazon without her ordering it. At least she didn't remember ordering it. And she started reading and started doing worksheets, and she's just, you know, moving her life forward. And she said, I'm going to bring this into my book study club. And she'd started the club after she had this near-life experience where she clinically died. After she had this brain bleed, this stroke that led to a brain bleed. She had a break with the non-being self. And everybody that has this near-life experience comes back, and they've had a chance to experience themselves as who they are without reference to the carbon-based memory, fictitious self. And some people I've run into kind of have some, you know, sort of partial memory of that, but they never did anything with it. But most people, their lives change dramatically because even though they don't know it's what they realize that's not who I am. And they struggle and work to try to bring into expression in their lives who they really are, and that's the work of Yeshua. Again, Yeshua's stated purpose was, I come to bring you life more abundantly, and to bring forward the full expression of human life that pre-brainwashed self, generational pattern of hostility and fear has to be defeated, has to be taken apart. And most of the world functions in that self. And so anyone who's, you know, crawling out of the bucket with the diagnosis gets pulled back in. And so I just support you in, you know, never referring to the diagnosis again as something you own or belongs to you or really has anything to do with you. It's called awakening. It's classic.
Yeah. I think you helped me see that one of the reasons I use it is for inclusion, because if I were to say to certain audiences that I had this awakening, you know, I thought, could be incorrect, that I might lose people who would kind of say, okay, well, this is going into, you know, it could be for some people like, okay, this is going right where I want it to go. And for others, it could be, okay, this is going into, you know, kind of woo-woo-ville. And so I learned over the years, which I'm willing to unlearn, to use that kind of to include people in and then open up and dismantle it further in the, once they're in the door, if you will.
right.
But
well, and if you're talking
it's
to somebody who's had that kind of diagnosis,
unlearn.
Yeah. Well, you might still use it as, I could see where you might still use it as a tool for others who've been given that same, you know, two who don't know, diagnostic name. It might be a way to talk to them and coach them out of that into the truth of what happened to them. And the world doesn't know how to handle that. I can remember working with a woman back, this goes back probably 30 years ago, and she was actually referred to me by a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist, she had come to him for a second opinion. She'd been under the care of a separate psychiatrist, and he was getting ready to put her into long-term asylum because she was clinically crazy. And in order to do that, they had to have a second opinion to force her into that. And so the psychiatrist is someone who knew of my work and referred her to me. And when we uncovered her memory of her, the image in her mind of being a child, and I don't remember exactly what age, if I remember correctly, it was maybe 5 or 6. And standing with her father at the in the front of an asylum, where her father was pointing out to her mother in a window way off in the distance, who had just been put into an asylum that she never came out of. When she uncovered that memory and the pain of the loss of her mother being taken from her that way, she went from, you know, the reason she was going to be incarcerated just like her mother was because she'd become non-functional in her relationship with her husband and her family. She had no relationship left with her kids. Her husband had left. They were, you know, divorcing, and, you know, she was quote-unquote crazy. When we went back through still point breathing to that moment where she had this just deep, horrific pain of losing her mother and remembering just seeing, you know, the little picture of her up in that window up there where Dad said, well, you know, Mom's gone now. Within about 3 weeks, the other thing was that she had lost her job and couldn't hold a job down. Within about 3 weeks, she was back to work. She was back in full-blown happy relationship with her husband. Mm. And back in relationship with the kids who were so estranged, that, you know, like, we need to put Mom away. When we uncover the things that lock us into this non-being space of hostility and fear and are able to embrace them and process through them, then
the thought disorders that take us out of the world's way of doing things, oftentimes are the vehicle into living as the truth of who we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can take a thousand different forms. It's as variable as there are people.
And that's the key for people who are listening too, who are doing this. It's like, it's, and some of you I know have been doing it for a long time, probably longer than I have, but essentially it does show up how it needs to show up for us. I'd love to, if it's okay, before we go to Beatitude 8, or you might have more on Beatitude 7, of course, but before we move forward, I was inspired earlier this year to write about, you know, the whole how mental health, you know, can show up. And my first fiction novel I put out, just kind of mostly the friends and acquaintances, called Prisoner of War. And I just today put it up on Amazon. And so it's resetting the price, but today it's 99 cents, and tomorrow and for the next 5 days, I would have made it today, except for the rules on Amazon. For the next 5 days, it'll be free on Kindle. So if anyone is interested and would like to read it, it's a really interesting story that takes place in the future, in the year 2032. But it revolves around kind of mass formation, which is also known as mass psychosis, and a couple of different avenues of how it's approached in the book, one via technology and integration into the body, and another via this work, essentially, but through this main character, Marcus, who kind of navigates his own, what the world would call insanity, but his own awakening process. And it's really quite fun. It was amazing to put this out. So just for anyone who's interested, you know, and is live on here, if you go there tomorrow to Amazon, and it's by a pseudonym author, John Aconda. I just use that for this fiction work, Aconda. So Prisoner of War by John Aconda is out today. So thanks for letting me share that. I meant to, and I apologize, I meant to actually email you.
Yeah, it's cool.
You ahead of time to ask permission, so I hope that wasn't...
No, that's okay. No, that's perfect. That's
free
perfect.
Gift for everybody.
All right. Well, we'll download it and give it a listen. Prisoner of War. I'm just looking as we speak. Cool.
Yeah, and the pricing up there, it'll be adjusted in a few minutes. I think it's still $4 or something. It'll be down to 99. Again, tomorrow it'll be free.
Cool. Well, you hadn't told me about that. Well, let's see. There's a book by that name by Michael P. Spradlin, but that's not the book you're talking about.
No, you probably, because it just went out, you probably have to type in the author, John Aconda, to locate it. And of course, Michael, if you'd like, once I get some print copies, I'll ship you a copy.
Cool.
I found that the subtitle of it
started
it was possible to heal from a mental illness.
Yep. And it's still kind of loading. The image isn't there on the Kindle one, but if you click on the paperback, it'll show you the cover of the book and description.
Cool.
Yeah, it's fun
awesome.
To get that out there. And
nice.
As we get
nice.
To the Beatitudes, I'll share some of the things I learned, you know, from the Beatitudes in putting this together. As we go further on.
Right. And
8, 9.
Yeah. Cool. Well, if we look at that, you know, the poster that we did, I only went to the 8th Beatitude because the 7th Beatitude, because it really is the protocol, the instruction set for producing a mind that, rather than functioning from carbon-based memory, what most people call a mind, produces the what was in Aramaic, you know, they speak of two minds. There's the non-being mind, the mind of Adam, almost the red clay, and then there's what was called the mind of Christ. And the word Christ is usually thought of in this Greek philosophical culture as a religious word, but the word Christ really, it isn't a name, first of all. It's the title of an office. So, you know, if let's say Mark ran for the mayor of Naperville, we would call him Mayor Mark, but mayor wouldn't be his name. It would be the office that he holds. Well, Christ is the name of an office in Aramaic, and actually the word more literally would mean the buttered one. They anointed people who'd awakened to the truth of who they were with oils, butter. And so that word Christ represents living as a human being. You know, Paul talks about the mind of Christ in you. That isn't Yeshua. You know, there was no man, Yeshua Christ, Jesus Christ. There was Yeshua who lived in the mind of Christ in him, encouraging others. You know, it's interesting, the church tried to create this exclusivity. He's the only begotten son, the Greeks tell us. Well, if you go to that passage in Aramaic, it doesn't say what the Greek translated as the only begotten, it says the first begotten. Now, somebody woke up to there and said, hey, guys, here's how you do it. The things I do, you can do. And when you do, it'll be greater because you'll be living out of literally your birthright, and that is the mind of loving you, the mind of Christ. And so this eighth beatitude really is saying that, well, you know, people are going to look at you a little strange. So they, Greeks translate that as you're going to be persecuted for righteousness' sake. If you're living truly as a human being, the crabs are going to try to pull you back in the bucket. And so when it speaks of the kingdom of heaven, so if you're living out of the community of love, the world based in hostility or fear isn't probably going to like you very much. And so this idea of being persecuted for it, and I think, you know, if back at day one when you had this opening for that mind to start to operate in you, which the world really didn't recognize, if you had support from then, you'd be them, pardon me, for that state way back when it happened rather than having to wait until we met, you'd be, you know, a whole lot further along the road. So wish we'd connected earlier, but, you know, obviously it was the right timing.
Yes. So can I add to that?
Please, absolutely.
One of the interesting things about Beatitude 8 and 9, so 8 and 9 kind of deal with this idea of, you know, the persecuted, and then 9 goes into the, you know, a little bit of additional thing. And the way that I've come to understand it so far in my practice is that there's this, after 7, right? So 7, and I'll back up a little bit because you had mentioned the Christ piece. One of the things just that I thought when I first kind of went down the track of realizing, like, oh, wait, so this Christ can come alive in us. It's like the, you know, the laying down of the non-being, and then there's this risen being, this, you know, the Christ-conscious self, the optimal self, if you will. And I had this thought for a time that, oh, then I'm done. And that's not true. And Beatitude 8 kind of helped me really settle into that. It's like, oh, wait, what 8 is really informing us of, and I love the way, again, J.M. brought up the word, this persecuted word, in a form that said, move out of your comfort zone. It's like this loving force, this power of this, these active forces of God are moving through us, and we're going to be moved away from our old habits. We're going to be moved out of our comfort zone. We're going to be moved out of those old habits so that we can get moved back into alignment with that pure self. And
you're going to function as a human being.
And so what I started to see is, and initially it didn't feel really as good as it did later because I was in resistance, you know, that great resistor, right? But what happened for me is I would be confronted with these old habits, and there would be inspiration to do it differently. And it was moving through all that was in me. It was going back to Beatitude 1. Even though we're in Beatitude 8, it was going back to Beatitude 1 and 2 and 3 in that to allow for more refinement. And I saw old habits fall away. And there's so many examples that could be shared, but one that I've shared many times that's a real simple story is when I would feel a sense of overwhelm, you know, in my day, I would find that inevitably I'd end up in the pantry. And in our pantry, you know, we still had, you know, crackers and chips and things, and I would end up eating, you know, crackers and cheese and sausage or whatever it was. And then I would feel better, quote unquote better, and go back and attempt to work through whatever it was. So
right.
Over time, what began to happen, and in Beatitude 8 here, as I started to get to this more refined state, I would find myself moving to the pantry. And it's a walk-in pantry, so I'm standing in the pantry, and I had no action to pull anything off of the shelves. I was just standing there. I remember my wife one day saying, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm not quite sure, but I'm standing here." And what was really occurring is I was being confronted with a habit. And finally, after this happened, call it dozens of times, and each time I'd say, "Anything for me to be aware of." And that's one of my common phrases, "Anything for me to be aware of." And I'd just breathe. And sometimes there's this spark of insight. And one day it became really clear. It's like, hey, when I'm in a state of overwhelm, it's because I'm so accustomed to burying that sensation, I would use food and then try to get to a place where my system was calmer. So once
was
that
drug.
Released, yes, it was my drug. Once that released, I was able to navigate overwhelm in much better. And it still took a little bit of time, right? Because then it's like, wait, I'm feeling this. Now I'm aware of it. So it moves from the unconscious to now I'm conscious of it. Now what do I do instead of going to the pantry? And no, now what I've experienced is in the today reference, if there's a sense that there's something overwhelming, you know, then I go right to the breath, I allow for the emotions, and I allow for my perception to shift from where it is to open up to, well, what else is true? What's really optimal here? And I can stay present, and there's no movement toward, you know, any drug, if you will.
Yeah, that's, you know, when you put it in terms, think back to the intensive where we talked about a healing crisis, and the healing crisis happens when, one, I'm doing more and more of the right things. Think about the time when you found yourself in the pantry. You're doing more and more of the right things. And just before that happens, you hit a new level of vitality. When that occurs, then something that needs to be processed out of the system that's based in usually some form of hostility or fear is going to surface. What the world teaches us to do when those healing opportunities surface is go anesthetize against them. You know, give me a fifth of scotch. Give me some caffeine. Give me some sugar. Give me some white flour. Give me something to devitalize myself and shut this new level of vitality down. I was talking to a physician the other day who had just been through what he was, and this guy's a pretty well-known healer in Florida, and we do a lot of processing. And he's been doing this work for about 25 years now, but he was telling me about how he'd just gone through these horrible symptoms in his sinuses and all this stuff was going on. Man, he was in this big disease process. It's like, wait a minute, John, take a breath. Hold on here. What I hear you describing is you've been doing more and more of the right things. Is that true? Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
oh, sorry.
You took a new, he's actually a supplement manufacturer, and you'd created this new supplement, and the way his mind interpreted was when he took this new supplement, all of a sudden he said, well, that
bottle that I had must have been old and had a bunch of bacteria in it, because as soon as I put it into my sinus just went crazy. And, man, I've been sick for 3 days. It's like, wait a minute. No, you haven't been sick at all. And, no, you didn't take on a bunch of bacteria. You've been doing more and more of the right things, right, John? Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. You hit a new level of vitality. Man, the day before, he said, I was flying high. I felt so good. It was just, okay, so now that you've hit a new level of vitality, your system's able to dig into the next layer of what you need to process through, and you went into a physiological detox with your sinuses, which, remember, that's been one of the places where your symptoms have showed up all the way back from when you were a little kid. Oh, yeah, never thought of that. So you didn't take in bacteria. You hit a new level of vitality, and here you are with what you need to process through. And the culture teaches us to drug ourselves when that happens, and that's a signal that says, oh, I need to keep doing more of the right things rather than head to the pantry. And allow my healing process to occur.
That is so good. So good. And the shift happens when, instead of someone saying, and he gave a great example of resistance, like, oh, I don't want this, like, this is worse, right? But someone who's more conscious in Beatitude 8 is going to say, oh, wait, something's different, and what did I do different? And so there's, like, almost the maturing of that is to embrace it. Like, okay, I'll use an example of a friend of mine who bought some NanoSoma. I met him, he's down in Texas, and he and his wife started using it. And NanoSoma is this wonderful product that you're familiar with, you might have talked about it in the program, but essentially he started to feel tenderness in his head. And he's like, well, that's interesting. Now he's aware of the healing process, he's a chiropractor, and it healed up after, you know, a couple of days or whatever, and then another soft, tender spot. And he started to connect. He's like, wait a minute. And he had 6 concussions in his life. And as he kept taking the NanoSoma, it went from one spot to another spot, and one of them was actually, he was hit in the eye as a 6-year-old, and his eye finally felt really tender. And then that healed up. And then after the physical stuff healed up, he started to open up to more of the emotional traps that had been there, and
exactly.
That started to open up. So he called and was like, Mark, I just want to tell you, like, how great this is, because he's like, I didn't know this was there. But he had the eyes to see that he was actually moving forward, even though something that temporarily, you know, showed up as, you know, something uncomfortable was appearing in his head.
Exactly.
And that's the idea. Allow yourself to be moved out of your comfort zone. Allow yourself to be, you know, it's like, that's part of the process of becoming.
Continue to do the behavior, the quote-unquote right things to keep you moving in that direction. A lot of times when that healing
yes.
crisis happened, and that's why it's been called a crisis, that's when people turn back to their old habits. You know, there are 4 things that we talk about, 4 questions to ask yourself when you become symptomatic, whether your symptoms are a disease process or a healing process. The first question is, have I been doing more and more of the right things? Second question is, had I hit a new level of vitality? Well, then up come the symptoms. I'm symptomatic. There must be something wrong with me. Well, no. Ask yourself the third question. What's happening with your elimination? In a disease process, there's a restriction of elimination. In a healing process, there's an increase in elimination. And then the fourth one is, and this is especially important for people who've been involved in addiction healing, and that is that there will be a craving of the drug that was used when the initial offense occurred. Best example I've got of that is we have a young woman who actually started doing this work back 40 years ago. She met me at a workshop in Michigan, and she's a naturopath, or she's actually written several books on nutritional healing, and it's like, was kind of a purist when it came to food. And she sort of abandoned this work and then came back around to it almost 40 years later. She actually was on the radio show quite often during the period of about a year when she was digging back into her forgiveness work. And she called me one day and she's, Michael, I don't know what's going on. I can't control myself. Now, in the naturopathic world, you know, there's an understanding that, like, for instance, if you've got a body that's, you know, a pound or two and you want to build it to a 1,000-pound body within a year, cow's milk is a really good thing. If you've got a body that is, you know, a pound or two in utero, and by the time it's four, you want to have a body that's about 30 to 35 pounds, you probably need mother's milk, not cow's milk. And so in the naturopathic field, we oftentimes, in order to help people to create a repulsion from the stuff that maybe people are addicted to, we call it cow pus. And so, you know, this woman for decades has never eaten ice cream, but she's doing worksheets, and she calls me, and she's like, oh, I don't know what's going on. I can't help myself. She said, I'm just eating ice cream by the gallon. I'm just sucking it down, and I haven't touched ice cream in decades. What's going on? I said, well, what are you doing? What's that? Well, I've been working on stuff with my dad and, you know, the abuse. Her father was from the Middle East and was, you know, she was treated as a female, oftentimes as Middle Eastern men treat women, and she was working through a lot of that abuse. And so she shared that and said, well, you know, when dad had abused you and afterward was feeling bad, what did he do? Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
He take me out for ice cream.
Oh, my
goodness. So as a kid, every time, you know, dad abused her, his way of making up was to fill her with ice cream. So here she is, you know, 45 years later, and she's working through this abuse with dad and going back to her old drug, the sugar and the, there's actually an opiate in cow's milk that addicts people to milk, caseal morphine it's called. And the protein molecule ties in with morphine. It's literally an addictive substance. And that was her, like, you know, we talked afterwards. That was her last mouthful of ice cream. She had no attraction to it whatsoever. But the fourth thing that'll tell you when you're symptomatic, when you're in this state, is there's this attraction to or this craving for. And my take is because when we take an addictive substance in, the energy signature, if not the actual molecules, are locked away with the energy that we dissociate from, that we stuff down, that we hold the breath around and lock out of view. And literally, when the healing process occurs, when we become vital enough to rise above that and process it out, then those energetic signatures are going to start to move back out of the system, and you can't think of anything else but that. And if you're not conscious of and aware, you know, we've all heard about the guy that, you know, he got his 30-year chip just last week. He hasn't had a drink in 30 years after, you know, a couple of decades of being a drunk. And after 30 years, he falls off the wagon. What happened? Well, he got his 30-year chip, all kinds of excitement and aliveness, new level of vitality. And so what occurs when he's got all that support and that new level of vitality, up comes that craving for that alcohol. And if he doesn't know that it's his body detoxing that old energy signature, then there can be falling back into the addiction. And so each time you go through a layer. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the beauty, you're probably going to say the same thing, so I apologize. It's like if you, the people who do that, whether it's the ice cream or the alcohol, the attitude is essentially saying is as those habits fall away, the kingdom of heaven is yours. It's like you're going to have this true relationship with that divine mystery that's available to all of us. And there's another level of insight or movement forward in your life toward what's optimal for you. You know, as you talk about with Tuba, the whole point is like these are all moving you into your optimal life, your happiness and well-being, et cetera.
You're going to function as you were designed to function, as the offspring of love, because you are love, period. But that's not something that, you know, is very welcome in the crab bucket, generally speaking.
No, and I'll go to the crab bucket next with Beatitude 9, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, go for it.
So so my doesn't mean it's right, right? There's, I'm not claiming to be the master expert on this, but my understanding that helped me navigate these Beatitudes was to see for me that Beatitude 8 had a lot to do with my inner, and Beatitude 9 had to do with how people respond to my inner change and some of the things I put out there. So that blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake, is how it reads in the you know, King James kind of stuff. But what I look at this one is like, hey, when we bring out, you know, in Beatitude 7, when we bring things out, they're going to support other people in finding their path, no matter how that looks. I mean, you could be, you know, building tires and do that. You can do lots of different ways wherever you are in your life and what you're inspired to do. But if you're coming from that and then you're going through this further purification in Beatitude 9 or 8, Beatitude 9 is going to essentially reflect to anyone on this path that, hey, not everyone's going to like it, like you said before. You know, they're going to project potentially on you and attack and even separate from you. Because
they might even give you some kind of crazy diagnosis.
Yeah, they might do
some
that.
Kind of crazy diagnosis and want to put you away in an asylum.
Right.
Because you're
actually
functioning
as a
human being.
And the key is, can we maintain our presence of being while that's happening?
Exactly.
And so just a real quick lived experience, and I'll let you kind of close up on this one. Going back just to the simple example of the pantry. When my wife walked by and said, what are you doing? Right? And she didn't say, oh, hey, sweetie, you know, you look really nice today. It's, you know, with a big smile on her face. What you doing? It was more like, what are you doing? With kind of the look of,
what's wrong with you?
You look really weird. What's wrong? And for me to be present, say, yeah, I don't really know, but I'm in the pantry. I'm here. That would be someone in that particular moment who is able to stay present. But if I had responded differently and said, oh yeah, I don't nothing. You know, I was getting some crackers and I pulled the crackers and go back into the evidential mind to try to, you know, look normal, you know, which was one of my big things too. Interesting contrast, right? Then that would be then, okay, there's some unripeness there in me, but everyone's going to face this. Anyone on this path, you're going to face this, and one of the things I've learned to do is celebrate it. And
absolutely.
I've learned to recognize when someone's attacking, that's off energy, I understand that. So can I stay present and then start to, from that place, you know, invite the active forces of God to come through in the words, in the thoughts, in the breath, in everything, just to know right action at that moment.
And, of course, when my perceptual mind constructs an attack from the outside, it's because what I'm now getting the opportunity to process through and heal is all the ways I have attacked myself. I'm projecting that into my brain's image of what they say or do, and, you know, they can say or do what they say or do. I'm only going to interpret this attack as if that resonates the ways in me that I have attacked myself. And it's my opportunity to refine the next level of what goes on inside of me and remove those energetic patterns and live in, now that I'm all the way through the Beatitudes, that latent neural structure the Creator's put in me to guide me to happiness and well-being can come into full blossom, full expression, because I've given up everything that shuts it down, and the last thing to go is going to be that attack stuff. So that someone could stand there and do what the world calls attack, and I'll look and go, that's interesting. Because there's no attack left in me. I've processed through it all. I just stand as the offspring of the Creator, the expression of love, and go, do you need some support? You look like you're really in pain. I'm listening to your voice, and it sounds like there's some stuff going on for you. How can I support you? Rather than, look what you're doing to me. And that's a big one to give up. Like, that's a major piece of work. I'm talking from personal experience. That's a major piece of work to do.
It is. It is. It's one of the hardest ones for me was the, and I'm not through, again, I'm a work in progress. I use these every day.
We
every
all
day.
Are. We all are, Mark.
And and one of the things that Beatitude 10, you know, really highlights is you're going to keep doing this. It's like rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they, the prophets, which were before you, which is in some of the studying I've done, it's like, okay, we're going to, A, we're in good company. You know, so anyone who's ever gone through this path of awakening has done these things. You know, they may not have had them written down the way we have them written down, but this is the process of healing. And Jesus gave it to us. Yeshua gave it to us. It's like this, one of the greatest gifts given to humanity is right here in these little practices, which we can find
absolutely.
In all of the tools you teach. You can find the Beatitudes in them. I mean, these things are really, really beautiful. And what it's saying is continue doing this until the last vestiges of fear have been healed. Until you're, like you said in the previous thing, until you can be fully human always. But if something happens to throw off that game, if you will, you got some tools, right, to pull into practice and move back into that human state, the being state.
And the greatest addiction of these, we could put it into that, you know, kind of scriptural language. What is the greatest addiction of all? When Yeshua talks about the first and the second and the greatest commandment, what's the greatest addiction? What's the last one that everybody gives up if they're going to actually do the work and give it up? It's hostility. You know, it's such a common addiction that we call hostility an emotion. Hostility is not an emotion. Hostility is an anesthetic. It's no different than alcohol. It's a drug. It's a way, when pain is resonated in us, to anesthetize against feeling that pain. And if I anesthetize against feeling it, I can't work through it. I can't heal it. And so each time that hostility is aroused, you know, to stop focusing on, you know, the pointer to the outer world, look, it's you that's making me so mad, and stop going, here I am. Where is this tightness that locks me into this hostility and has me believe this whole perceptual construct about myself that's false? And to give up that anesthetic, that drug, is what empowers us to go to the last piece of work that needs to be done and reclaim the truth of who we are as human beings.
Well said.
Breathing with you and with our whole audience, and we're down to the last minute. So, Mark, I'm going to say thank you for participating in this discussion the last few days, and it's a delight to get to interplay with you, and